Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. You probably recognize my guest, Jerry Adler, as a character actor from TV and movies, with roles on projects like The West Wing, Manhattan Murder Mystery, and The Sopranos, where he played Tony's longtime associate, Hesh.
I got some money on the street over there. Apparently, they got back to the Phil's guy, Jerry Torciano.
The hairdo?
He claims that he felt that Eli here was some independent shy trying to poach his customers.
Is that a catheter?
Massive internal bleeding. Have a skin is sheared off his hips. My daughter's besides herself.
You send somebody to Brooklyn, you talk to Phil about this mook, this,
Jerry Torciano. Sorry I yelled at you, kid.
As you learn in his new book, acting was a surprise second career for the Broadway manager, producer, and director who was born into a legendary theater family. Jerry Adler's book is called Too Funny for Words, Backstage Tales from Broadway, Television, and the Movies, in which he covers the many ups and downs of a life in the Klieg Lights and far from them. Adler is now 95, and he says his next role is always a phone call away. Jerry Adler, welcome. Thank you for being here.
How are you? Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. As I said, you were born into a family that worked in show business. Was there ever a time when you didn't want to work in show business yourself?
Always from childhood on, I was always happy to be in show business. It was a great thing to do in our family line, so I was happy to do it.
You had a lot of different jobs in the theater. How did you learn the ropes?
Well, I learned the ropes, learning something on the job training. That was me. I got a job when I was an assistant stage manager on a show called Gentlemen Prefer Blondes with Carol Channing. And I was 21, just going on to 21 at the time, and knew nothing about the industry and certainly learned as I went along.
I was surprised to learn that you were able to mix show business and your time in the service also.
I got drafted in 1952 during the Korean War, and I got stationed at Fort Dix over in Wrightsville, New Jersey. And what I did for the whole time I was in the Army, I directed soldier shows. We used to put on plays and send them out to different forts in the First Army. I wasn't exactly in trouble.
Yeah, you stayed far away from the fighting.
I was not in the firing line, no.
So eventually you made it back to New York. Can you talk a bit about the different jobs you've had, you know, stage managing and directing and producing? You kind of did it all.
My first half of my working career was on Broadway. I did 40 shows as a stage manager. I directed a couple of shows. I produced a musical. During the 1980s, I decided I wanted to go to California, maybe a break into movies as a first assistant director. So I kind of moved out there and tried to get in the movie, but it didn't work out.
What did you like about the life in a Broadway theater?
It's a strange life, don't forget. You only work at night. All day long, you sit away, you know, you have a normal life up until dinner time, and then you have a quick dinner with your family, and you go to work. It's a kind of a weird lifestyle, I think. Most people really can't get used to it.
It seemed to me like there's a tension between having a show that's working well and is successful, and then finding yourself having to stay on it for a long period of time, months or even years in some cases, and then it becomes the same thing every day. So how did you keep your work kind of fresh when you were doing that backstage job?
What was wonderful about being a stage manager is you could go off and do other things. When you were with a big hit like My Fair Lady, you could take like a leave of absence and go do another show, open it up, and then when it opens, you go back to My Fair Lady. So My Fair Lady became a kind of a focal point of work. You always knew you had a good job waiting for you.
It occurred to me reading your book that a lot of what you did was problem solving. You know, somebody would be late, somebody would be hungover, somebody wasn't hitting their cues, and you had to kind of figure out a solution most of the time.
That's what the stage manager does. He takes care of everything. He keeps the show working. And then when you become an actor, the stage managers are doing that for you. It's a kind of great turnaround. And I didn't do it until I was getting ready for Social Security. Then I became an actor in my 60s.
And we'll get to that in a second. Just a couple more things about theater. Were you surprised to be working on a hit, or did you know when something was very good and it would be successful?
We know we had a great hit with My Fair Lady. That was a given. That was when the only question was how long would it survive on Broadway. In television, when we were working on, when we were doing the pilot for Sopranos, it was an ordinary kind of Captain Robert show. And the genius of it was the fact that Tony had a psychiatrist and we could go to solve his problem. So that was a different kind of thing. But that's the way it worked in the show business.
Tell me about your time working on soap operas.
I did soap operas starting in the 1980s on a soap opera called Santa Barbara, which is a wonderful show. But the hours of work was enormous. Don't forget, we did, I think, like 40 pages of script every day. We came into work at between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. for a quick rehearsal. And then you work, and then you taped all of those scenes. And by the time you got finished, it would be certainly into the dinner hour. You would put in a good 12 or 13 hour day every day. Six days a week. You had one day off, you had Sunday off.
How did you keep track of all the plot intricacies associated with soap operas? Because they obviously, you know, there's a lot of melodramatic development over the course of a week on a soap opera.
Right. I didn't get into the comings and goings of the characters in the soap opera. Mine was much more technical of getting the scenes taped. So I didn't follow the extraordinary storylines that appeared in a soap opera. It was unbelievable, some of the appearances. An actor would get killed on a Friday and appear on Wednesday as a new character. It was a world unto itself. It's unbelievable. Very, very tiring.
It seems to me that the soap opera actors don't get enough respect for how much memorization they have to do, and they don't get a lot of takes either.
It's the toughest job in show business. Learning all that material every single day, getting home from work at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and being back on stage at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m., it is an exhausting, terribly, terribly exhausting job. And I'm thrilled to have been associated with these people, but they are just relentless.
So you were involved in a successful national tour of Camelot. Can you tell me a good Richard Burton story or memory that you have?
Richard Burton. He was a delightful man, first of all, a true gentleman. And he had a problem with one of the actors in the show, who had bad breath. And he came to me one day and said, "Is there any way you can speak to so and so?" I said, "What's wrong?" He says, "His breath is like the sea giving up its dead." Which is something that's got to be taken care of right away. We got a big bottle of Listerine and put it on the this guy's dressing room table. So he got the gist. But Richard was kind enough not to really make a problem out of it. He skirted around and did it the right way. He came to the stage manager and let him handle it. That's right.
So eventually, as you say, you made a jump to the front of the camera. It must have been such a surprise to be working as an actor. I get the sense that you really got a kick out of this kind of second career of yours.
Well, what was wonderful was I auditioned for this movie because a friend asked me, who was doing the casting, asked me to come because the director described me as one of the characters, and I finally got the job. And when the men in the soap opera, everybody in the soap world wants to graduate into features. That's their main quest in life, to be in a movie. And now here, the stage manager of the show is making a movie and they're stuck in the soap opera.
Our guest is character actor Jerry Adler, a longtime Broadway stage manager, producer, and director. His new memoir is Too Funny for Words, Backstage Tales from Broadway, Television, and the Movies. When you started doing it, how did you know how to act?
I had a great, experience as a stage manager and director. So I took each, I had no training as an actor. So I took each scene that I was going to do and approached it as, how would I direct this particular scene? And that's the way I would act it. It kind of turned out okay.
Your cousin, I believe, is the famous acting teacher, Stella Adler. Did you develop a technique the more you did it that was your way, or was it always the way you've just described it? Let me think of this as a director. Did you find yourself like getting into the character in a deep way and something?
I'm totally working as a director. It certainly colored everything I did as an actor, because I had no training as an actor. And so my training as a director helped me get through all of this. Nobody helped me, I'll tell you that much. I did it myself.
Unlike many actors, you talk about how much you enjoy going to auditions.
I think that's the best part of the business.
Really?
The interplay between you and the guy who's, or the woman who is doing this particular project. To be able to create a kind of relationship with a stranger, as it turns out, when you're looking for a job, and that was the most fun, is creating a relationship with the man who is going to be your boss, in effect.
Maybe it was different for you in some way because you were known to so many people working in the industry, but did you ever go to an audition and see a lot of people who looked like you, like in the hallway, all there for the same part?
Well, when I became an actor, I was a character actor, and a new character actor all of a sudden came on the scene. Nobody knew him. Nobody knew what his name was. I was a new face. So I got a lot of jobs. And so I always, when I was doing these auditions, I'm auditioning with a group of people of my age, my size, my coloring, my look. And what makes you stand out at these auditions is how much a relationship you can create on a happy tone with the employer.
Did you ever have a very bad audition that sticks out?
I did a lot of those. I'm like a baseball player. If you hit 300, you're doing pretty good, which is 3 out of 10. If you get 3 jobs out of 10 auditions, you're doing very well.
So you said being a kind of a new face helped you get some work, including in Manhattan Murder Mystery, which is kind of built on the fact that you're not the obvious person in the plot. For people who haven't seen the movie, I don't want to spoil it, but how did you end up kind of insinuating yourself into the world of Woody Allen movies?
Well, that was the genius of casting then. It was casting a man in a part. Nobody was supposed to know that he was the murderer. So he cast a guy that nobody knew. And it looked like a man who lived in the same building. And I didn't find out I was the murderer until I was on the movie for a week and a half when I found out I was the murderer. Of course, we only got scenes every day. We didn't get the full script. So I never knew that I was the murderer.
What do you do when you get a script? Maybe the part's okay, but you think the project's not that good. Is that in your mind when you go to set that you got to really hit a home run in your own performance because the project, you know, doesn't seem that promising?
There are auditions that you do only because you want to create a relationship with the casting people. You want them to know who you are and what you do, even though you know that the thing that you're auditioning for is not particularly interesting. Again, it's 3 out of 10. You know?
You talked about when you work in the theater that you wait all day to work at night. There's also a lot of waiting on sets. How did you deal with the hurry up and wait of getting into costume and then, you know, they've got to reset the cameras and everything and maybe your part is only going to film for a minute or so?
I enjoyed all of the, it's a different world, you know, and in the theater, you're doing that same job every single night. In films and television, every scene, every day is new because you're doing a storyline that stretches out. In the theater, you're doing a play, the same play every night.
I want to go to a lightning round with you, if that's okay. What's your go-to order from Zabar's?
Sturgeon.
Sturgeon. Your wife, Joan, chimed in to say sturgeon there.
Half a pound of sturgeon and a pound of noah.
When you think of James Gandolfini, who you were in The Sopranos with, what comes to mind?
He had the most extraordinary eyes. You can look into this man's intelligence and the beauty of this person. He was one of the kindest, most generous guys you ever wanted to meet. It was a tragic loss when we lost this guy. He was great. He was number one.
You've been on a lot of kind of prestige TV. Why do you think The Sopranos remains relevant? Now, you know, it's been off the air for almost 20 years at this point.
Well, the richness of the dialogue, the richness of the writing. And we used every Italian actor in the city of New York was in this wonderful show. I was the only one whose name didn't end in a vowel.
Did you feel like you stood out on the set?
I was friendly with everybody. And I was not one of the, what you would call, principle. I didn't have a contract to do every single episode. I was on and off. So every time I came on, I was rejuvenated the relationship with the actors. And it was a great group of guys. So it was really fun to do. Don't forget, we did this for 9 years.
And there was a lot of waiting sometimes in between the seasons where, you know, you would go and do other things and wait for The Sopranos just to get picked up again, or not picked up, but to restart again.
Well, the reason I wasn't in all of the episodes was because I was doing other things. The show had a kind of hiatus every now and then. In general, when I was doing an episode, you work 3 weeks and you're off a week. So we do the 3 weeks, jump on a plane, go to New York. I had a week in New York to do a scene or two scenes on The Sopranos, go back to California, do 3 more weeks, then go back to it. That was the routine.
What's your theory about the famous ending?
It was the most brilliant thing. I mean, we're still talking about it, aren't we? I had no idea that it was going to be done that way. I had a little bit of a scene after that written that was never filmed. I don't think anybody in the show, maybe Jimmy knew, but I don't think anybody else knew what David Chase was up to. But it was a brilliant idea. There was no way that David Chase was going to kill off Tony Soprano. So how do you end the show? Pull the plug.
A lot of actors like to sometimes complain about their agents, but yours is your daughter. What's that relationship like?
Well, she was she was kind of surprised when I did this audition, and it looked like I was going to get the part. I said, you're going to have to be my agent because it looks like I'm going to be an actor for a while. So she took me on in the Paradigm Agency, and she always looked out for me.
What's the key to living such a long life as you have?
Never say no. Keep going. go to work every day. That's not the last day. That's just a day to keep going. Always work. Wait for the phone to ring and do the job right. Keep it going on. Use all of your energies towards making sure that your job comes first.
We've been speaking with Jerry Adler. His new book is called Too Funny for Words: Backstage Tales from Broadway, Television, and the Movies. Jerry, great to meet you. Thank you so much for taking this time to speak with us. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's a bunch of anecdotes. I hope you get a good laugh out of it.